I hit a key there that wasn't a drum. Maybe you heard it. I did that. You hear that clunk. No sound comes out. So that's the last key, is this F sharp for this drum kit. I'm pretty sure there's like a convention for electronic drum kits and how they correspond to the keys on a keyboard. Like this C, I guess it would be C2, is the bass drum. And that D is just a regular snare. And the C sharp is like a side stick. And this E is a kind of a different kind of snare hit. Then all these keys from the F up to D are toms on the white keys, so you can kind of... And these three black keys, the three piano black keys, F sharp, G sharp, A sharp, are various hi-hat permutations. So you can kind of do a jazz beat just by doing 1, 2, 3. And usually the way the drums work is an open hi-hat. The open hi-hat sound is interrupted by the closed hi-hat sound, and it is stopped. Anyway, welcome to the Sound Show. It is Saturday, January 1st. As some of you may know, I live in the Sierras, so I was a victim of the big snowstorm that supposedly, I heard somebody say, in one place it dropped 16 feet of snow near Tahoe. That's quite a lot. But here, where I live, it was only about a foot, which is actually unprecedented for as long as I've been here, living here. This is the most snow as we've ever gotten. And so we were snowed in. And on top of that, we had a power failure that lasted 3 days. Some people are still without power. And there are people that are even further up high than us. They're in Pollock Pines, which is, I guess, is around maybe 3,500 feet, something like that. Maybe 4,000, maybe close to 4,000, getting close up there. Anyway, so many of them don't have generators, don't have any way to warm themselves, so they're just stuck there, often maybe snowed in. I don't know if any deaths are happening, but I heard of one place, it was a senior home, like a senior citizen apartment complex, and they had no power, and they had no generator. There was no on-site generator, so maybe it was kind of an El Cheapo senior living complex. Like, to not have a generator, I mean, come on, they're not that expensive for like an institution to have one, you would think. Although for a whole apartment complex, I don't know how you would do that, a generator that big. Maybe you would have to have several generators, probably several generators. But we have a generator here, and it powers most things, many things in the house. It doesn't power the stove, because the stove is, or the dryer, or the dishwasher, or things that just take a lot of electricity. It doesn't power. So, but it keeps the house hot. You know, it keeps the blower. And then we have propane for our heat source. So, using a lot of propane for the past week or so. I guess power went out. It was Monday, I think. Yeah, my Monday afternoon, and then it came on the night before last, like around in the evening before last, right around 7. So it was a while. It was, I think, three or four days without central power, without, you know, line power. But we had our generator going, so we weren't as bad off as some people. And of course, the worst thing for me, of course, was no internet. But I even had my little cell phone internet, my crappy limited data plan, which gets really bad reception here. You know, but so I didn't have no internet. I just had really bad internet. And I didn't have no electricity. I just had kind of crummy electricity. But the one part is that that was really solidly crappy is that you can't get out. You know, you're snowed in. And I took a walk to go down to the mailboxes yesterday, and I made the alarming discovery that we, this household are the only people on our road who are actually snowed in. Everyone else, the road has been driven down by four-wheel drive trucks and stuff. And so there are these two big tracks in the snow that are snow-free. So everyone can get out except for us. Our driveway is covered in snow, and then our portion of the road, which is an uphill, is covered in snow. So it's kind of like, eh. And then the main road off of our private road is totally dry. So it's not really a crisis for anyone except for us anymore. And I think we're, I don't want to say, but maybe Sunday I'll be able to get out. But I don't know. Don't count on it. But luckily we had lots of food. And we couldn't, but we couldn't cook any of it for a while because, you know, there was no oven. But when the power came back on, so the crisis is in the process of mitigation. Anywho, so part of my, and then in Colorado, we got these fires. So climate change, extreme weather. Boogity, 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 boogity. Speaking of that, I thought today I would do or try to do another topical sound show, another, like, you know, try to keep the talk up for a full hour. And so I Googled controversial topics, and I got a big list of just like controversial topics. And I guess I will try to go through them and say some stuff, how it relates to me, what I maybe think about it. And I find myself like kind of hesitating and cringing with a lot of them because it's like, well, for one thing, it's like they're not, I think they're controversial topics because they're not obvious. There's not an obvious answer to them. It's not just a black or white. This is the obvious conclusion, or else they wouldn't even be on here. So the first one is gun control. I used to really like guns. Well, I still kind of do like guns, but I don't really like shooting them. I've shot a number of times. I went to a clay pigeon shooting place with some Japanese tourists a long time ago. And I shot some clay pigeons. I did okay at it. I've been to a range a couple of times, I think. I did okay at that. It's like, I'm not a genius target shooter, but I think I'm competent. I can do it, you know, and I think I would get better if I practiced at it or whatever, but it's not really something that interests me. The peak lust I had for guns was probably when I was like 12 or 13. Then I just loved them. My friend got an M16 shaped BB gun, and I was just so excited by this, and he let me borrow it. So I would keep it out. I'd hide it out in the woodshed because my parents, my parents would not have allowed me to have like a BB gun, especially one shaped like a tactical rifle. But it was just so awesome. You know, I'd sneak out into the backyard and like fire a BB gun at the fence every once in a while, So yeah, that was really the peak gun interest. It was kind of like peak video game. Peak video game interest was around that time too. Peak martial arts, all the kind of like boyish interests that sort of will consume people I had around that time, but they kind of all faded and now I'm just kind of like, meh, who cares? Just trying to get through the day. But so the main thing that I don't like about guns, besides that they're kind of boring, like shooting at a target doesn't really interest me. But the main thing I don't like is that they're loud. They're incredibly loud. Like I fired a gun without ear protection once. It was just a little tiny revolver, a little .22 revolver, and my ears were ringing for a little while. So they're dangerously loud things. And I wonder, I think this is not often addressed that much, but like there must be substantial hearing damage in the military. This must be a huge issue. People with ringing ears and hearing loss, partial deafness, and it's not really talked about that much. And I guess there's not much they can do about it because you got to be able to hear your orders on the battlefield and so on. So you can't really wear earplugs. And at the same time, you got to be firing this explosive device. So I think I would probably like most people, most veterans probably have some hearing damage. You know, that's probably how it goes. Oh, I'm very mindful, I would say, of my hearing. I don't always think about it. You know, sound is very, 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 very front and foremost in my consciousness. So Anyway, but that's not addressing gun control. That just sort of roundabout talking about it. But I wanted to illustrate how I like guns, that they're cool kind of mechanical, technical things that you can kind of play with. Like, I would almost enjoy fondling it and taking it apart and putting it back together more than I would enjoy shooting. Because shooting it, it's loud, and then ultimately, it's destructive and illegal to destroy things, which is really the only fun thing you can do with a gun. Going to a range and shooting at a target, it just has I have no interest in that at all. But anyway, the whole thing of gun control is, there's this thing. Guns are, you know, used for self-defense. We have this very unique, that's a bad thing to say. You shouldn't say very unique, because unique is unique is unique. You can't be more or less unique. We have a unique constitution in the United States, is that firearms are built directly into the constitution. It's kind of weird. It's a little bit like the way the flag of Mozambique has an AK-47 on it. I'm going to draw an analogy there. So that creates problems, or some people say it's creates this great situation. Like there's this quote from supposedly somebody, maybe it was Tojo, just like Toe Jam. Tojo, a Japanese general or leader or something, said, "You cannot invade the American mainland. There would be a rifle behind every blade of grass." So it serves some purpose to have a populace that is armed, you know, to have the whole country just brimming with guns. I mean, but that kind of warfare, invading other countries and ground warfare, this, that, might be kind of obsolete or growing obsolete. I don't know. I mean, I think it may be the age of symmetric warfare is kind of over, where it's two big armies meet on the battlefield and fight, fight, fight. I don't think that really happens anymore, and maybe won't happen. I don't know. Who knows what the future brings? But so there's that. There's having guns to scare away the Japanese, and then there's also having guns to scare away the Redcoats. The Redcoats is being a theoretical tyrannical government, and I don't know the answer to that. I mean, I don't think that the government is scared of the people because the people have guns, because the government has bigger guns and the government knows how to use them better. And people, I think, are obeisant regardless of whether or not they're armed. So I don't know if that's really as big a thing as it's made out to be. So we have this problem in the United States of all these mass shootings that happen every so often. But I guess it goes beyond that. We have a sort of a culture of gun killing that not everyone is in favor of, man. So I think that I don't know exactly what I think about gun control. But the problem is, though, is if let's say that you put all these laws into place right now and said, okay, we're going to make the United States Canada or Sweden or whatever, and have a similar gun policy that they do, which is, it's very difficult to get a gun. But that doesn't, the problem is, if you suddenly did that now, there are a billion guns out there in the United States now. So what happens to all those guns? It's kind of like the can of worms has already been opened. So I think it's very hard for that reason. And also because without a constitutional amendment, repealing the Second Amendment, which I don't think would fly ever, I don't think it's like a solvable problem. It's really, you'd have to go back in time or something like that, and just not build so many guns. Because I think that's really, there just are so many guns in circulation now that it almost makes sense to have a gun to defend yourself from all the guns that are out there. So I don't know about gun control. But I guess that's why it's on this list of controversial topics. I mean, I probably didn't do that very much justice. I don't know. Maybe this was a bad idea. Anyway, next on the list is abortion. How do I feel? But that's pretty, for me, abortion is more cut and dry than gun control. I think abortion should be permitted. I'm not an anti-abortion person. Like back in like, you know, I've heard that back in like, you know, the ancient times or whatever, sort of the abortion would extend even to after childbirth. Like, you know, if unwanted babies would be discarded or whatever. So I don't know. Okay, third, religious freedom. That's kind of a silly one. It's like there's just like should people have the, of course they should have the freedom to follow their religion, I guess, unless of course the religion includes things like, you know, you must kill 10 people or whatever. I don't know. Maybe 9 people is okay. Animal rights. I'm just going down this list. That's a weird one, because rights is kind of a legal thing that I'm not sure that you can really extend the notion of rights to anything beyond humans. You can talk about animal welfare, I think, but I'm not sure animal rights is really, but that's kind of like a diversionary thing. So we can really talk more about animal welfare. And that I actually think is cut and dry too. I think that, well, they say, you know, looking back on history, what are these things that just seem obviously wrong now, like slavery, for instance. It seems like, well, how could people have done that for hundreds of years? And I think, and then that begs the question, well, what are we doing now that people 500 years in the future are going to say, you know, how could they possibly have done this? There was this massive moral confusion. And I think the treatment of animals is going to be high on that list. Factory farming for food and stuff like that. But at the same time, I was like, I know I should probably go vegan, but I just haven't done it. It just seems difficult. I don't know. It's a lot of social issues, and I don't know. Plus aesthetic issues. I mean, I like the taste of meat. So, and then there's the thing, like, it's not real. People say it's not realistic to say, you know, you shouldn't kill other animals for food because that's sort of built in, evolutionarily built into the planet. And yeah, that's true. But we've also got this unique situation here where we're this dominant species that's going to keep on inflating in population, you know, approaching 10 billion or whatever. So we got to change the way we live. And one of those ways might be to stop, you know, eating, farming and eating, mostly farming. I think mostly the problem is in. Is in agriculture. It's in keeping animal for meat purposes. I guess they're making strides now in what do you call it? Artificial meat, or I'd be curious to taste it. I'd be a little weirded out, then I wonder, like, would my mind persuade me that it tasted weird when it didn't actually taste weird? Maybe it's like delicious or something. I don't know. Maybe if nobody ever told me, and be fine with it. All right. So next on the list is vaccines. I am a triple vaccinated. I got my two shots and then I got my booster. But I know several people, I'm going to say three. I know three people in my immediate family that are not vaccinated and don't want to get vaccinated. And actually, I won't gossip that much, but yeah, so I have four people, and it just caused some issues. And one of them, I suspect it's just because I won't even specify gender, they don't want to get pricked by a needle. And it's like it upsets this person if you question them about it. So maybe there's some other weird stuff going on there. Who knows? But in the other ones, it seems like a clearly like a political directive. But then sort of the rationalization behind this political directive is often that the vaccine was developed too quickly and it's not a normal vaccine. It's not like the polio vaccine or something like that, where it's a chunk of the virus. It's like some kind of gene therapy. I don't exactly understand. It's an mRNA vaccine or something like that. And it works. The mechanism of action is different than a quote unquote normal vaccine. So people will say that, and they'll also say that it was developed too fast. And that's the reason. But it's a little bit confusing because my initial thought was that there was a lot of opposition to it But it was like there was it was a Trump the Operation Warp Speed. Actually, Biden recently congratulated, or he patted Trump on the back for that, and said that Trump did a good job on pushing the vaccine through very quickly. So, and I that just sort of I realized that recently that this is kind of the Trump vaccine. But so you would think that like all these Trump people would be very pro-vaccine, but no, that's not the case. And I was also surprised to hear. That see, I had always just assumed that it was just a Trump political directive. Trump said, "Don't get the vaccine." So, like all of his followers, like we will not get the vaccine. But a lot of I've heard that in other countries too. There's a lot of anti-vaccination sentiment as well. And then I guess the whole anti-vax movement predates this this COVID situation. So I don't know. It's a complicated thing. I personally would be nice if everybody, I think, got the vaccine. It would just from a statistical point of view, the more people that are vaccinated, the less transmission, less. I think the main thing that worries me is the hospital, the healthcare system being overburdened. And like, well, like what if I or somebody in my family got sick and had to get delayed treatment and then got sicker or died because the hospital was being taken up by unvaccinated patients who refused. So, I don't know. Yeah, vaccines, I definitely come out on the side of vaccines. I mean, I guess I can sort of understand. I mean, I've kind of struggled to understand the anti-vax position. But, and I suspect that a lot of it is disingenuous. Like people will say, they'll give these rationalizations, like the two things I said, it came out too fast and that's a different kind of vaccine, basically. But I think the real reason is just because it's seen as like the democratic government is pushing this thing. It's telling us what to do. So this kind of toddler-like American oppositional defiant disorder where you just go, no! When the government tells you to do something, wags your finger, your inner Ronald Reagan, you know, it pops out. Yeah, it just is this American character thing where you have this sort of inherent distrust and dislike of the government. And I don't know that that's very helpful. It's sort of a weird thing with American culture that doesn't seem to really exist in other places. I don't know. I really don't think it does. I think that's fairly. I'm going to qualify my unique again. I'm going to say that's fairly unique in the world is to have a people where like the political culture, it's almost baked in that they kind of distrust and even despise their own government. I don't know. So, yeah. Next one, privacy rights. I don't care that much about privacy. I've had this ever since the Snowden revelation came out. I always have in the back of my head everything that I Google, every website I go to. I just kind of have I imagine like a room full of smirking millennials at the NSA or whatever, just kind of looking at my searches and going and laughing at me. And I think Snowden actually said something like that in one of his interviews, that there really is a gang of smirking millennials, that they really do. There are people that are that do occasionally watch individual sets of data and like laugh at them or make judgments or whatever. I mean, this is hearsay. I don't remember exactly the source, but I'm pretty sure Snowden said something like that. Of course, who knows if Snowden, I kind of, my initial inclination was to really distrust Snowden. When he first came out, he seemed so kind of slimy and slick and like this performative narcissist. And like he thought he was like a special, unique, and he had to do. And some people are saying he's like a great hero. And I guess it just, maybe just his presentational style just kind of makes you distrust him. I don't know. Maybe that's what happens when you work in intelligence for a while, is that you kind of come across as a slime bag. It's like guys in prison. Like if you talk, like they all have this very performative style and you just kind of, they're like salesmen and you can just tell they're trying to get you to like them and trying to get you to trust them. And they're very animated and it just immediately raises red flags, like personality based red flags. Like, don't trust this person. So some of that kind of came up with me and Snowden, but I'm not so sure anymore. I think that just might be his style. Anyway, but yeah, like California has a law where you're not allowed to record people without their consent. And I find that annoying because I often think I want to record people. I want to carry around a little device and record them just to kind of protect myself because I've been lied to and burned enough times. Like at jobs, people will claim they never said something. Like some manager will claim, oh, I never said that, but they did. And I'm not entirely sure if they're lying or if they genuinely don't remember. And maybe it's a little combination of both. Like they really, really want that to be the case. So they kind of, you know, repress the memory or something like that. But at any rate, I would like to be able to record people. I think that I would benefit more from a lack of privacy than I would from extreme privacy. Like I think that if everything was totally opened up, I think that it would ultimately be a net win for me just because of my personal style. I don't know. So I generally tend to sort of come out on the side of surveillance. I don't know. I'm not real big on privacy rights, but I mean, people will call me foolish and say, you know, that you're inviting tyranny, especially because, I'm not super pro gun. So I don't know. Maybe these all come together. Okay. Next on the list is free market capitalism. Capitalism, as Slavo Žižek would say. Capitalism. I don't know. Free market capitalism is good, but at the same time, you got to have a welfare state. So I was just reading the other day that New Zealand is next to the United States, or maybe even above the United States, is rated one of the, maybe even the best place in the world to start a small business. Like they're very entrepreneurial and very capitalism friendly, but at the same time, they've got this very functional welfare state. So you can have your cake and eat it too. It's like, I think it's this, again, the sort of the stupidity of American culture that we think there's this oppositional binary, like we either have a functioning welfare state or we have the potential to get rich and be an entrepreneur. But no, you don't have to choose one or the other. You can definitely have both. So I'm pro free market capitalism. I think it's great. It's just sort of an inherently creative thing. And I think that's sort of what, that's sort of baked into the American character, American culture too, is this entrepreneurial spirit, like, you know, having a creative idea and generating this business all on your own and making it on your own, with just the power of your own ideas and your own creativity. So I think that's a good thing, essentially. So anyway, next, global climate change. Oh, the climate is changing. I had this kind of logical bug in my head for a while. Like the problem was, one of the arguments of people that wanted to say don't make climate regulation laws was that, yes, the globe is warming, but we cannot be absolutely certain that the cause is human. And I think that's still true. I think you can't be absolutely certain that the cause is human. It could be, I've heard, like a solar maximum. We're in a solar maximum. It could be some natural forces we don't understand. And then sort of by introducing that reasonable doubt of uncertainty, these, what would you call them? Environmental law oppositionalists, I guess, are able to justify in a legal, reasonable doubt kind of way, say no, because the consequences of these laws would be to put a handbrake on the economy, essentially. And they have a point. I think in order to really stop climate change and really stop carbon emission, you would essentially, I've been over this before in other shows, but so I'm a little bit rehearsed on this one. But you'd have to essentially voluntarily return to a state of poverty. It was actually Vladimir Putin who said something similar to this. He's like, yeah, there's people in developing countries like in Africa and even in India and even in China that are still living in kind of a third world way. And they're like just starting now to potentially emerge from that. And they see on the internet and on TV, like, you know, this lifestyle, this Western lifestyle. And they want that, and they've been promised that, and they think they're going to get it. But then, no, you wag your finger at them and say, no, you can't have that. You have to keep on living in your mud hut because, you know, this abstract climate change problem. So I think that's not going to work. You can't tell people that they can't have what they want. I think it's basically the problem is human greed. Is people just are acquisitive and they want comfort. They want to better themselves. They want to just, like, live better lives. Like, I was just thinking, like, it's funny, you take it for granted. Like, when the power came back on, I was just like, oh, wow, this is such a luxurious lifestyle that I lead. But I forget it. When the power has been on for a while, I'm like, oh, I'm so bored. All I have here is the internet and a billion other things. And I can drive my fossil fuel powered vehicle out to a billion places and see them. It's like I have too many options almost. So I think it's true. You really do need some kind of pain or adversity or something like that in your life in order to really appreciate like the good things, or else it just becomes like a take it for granted situation. Anyway, global climate change. Yes. So it's definitely underway. I guess the scenario, maybe like in 100 years, there'll be mass immigration, some kind of climate wars, etc. And maybe that'll contribute to or correspond with the population reduction. But I wonder, about other planets, you know, like other civilizations in the universe. Like, I think that it's fairly obvious that there are a lot of Earth-like situations in the universe. Maybe not in our galaxy. Somebody said, like, okay, maybe the scenario is like there are between 0 and 100. Technological civilizations in every galaxy, but they don't necessarily correspond in time or distance, and for the most part they're pretty inaccessible to each other. But it's like these little flowerings pop up in every galaxy from, like, you know, 1 to 100 times stretched over billions of years. I kind of lost my train of thought here. So these Earth-like planets. So I would think that, like, this is not a unique problem. It's like every civilization that discovers fossil fuels and uses that to power the ascendancy of their technology runs into this problem. And maybe some totally end up destroying themselves and some kind of luck out. Like, maybe it corresponds with an ice age. Like, I always think about that's a possibility. I've heard that, like, global warming could, in theory, help mitigate the next ice age, which I think we're kind of due for. Who knows? I don't know exactly. I don't think anybody knows exactly when, but I think maybe next thousand. I really shouldn't talk about that, but at some point soon, I think the next ice age is coming. So, and I think that basically dwarfs the warming power of carbon. Like, the ice age was going to be a lot colder than the warming is warm. So I don't know. Maybe on some of these Earth-like planets that happens, and there's just a perfect correspondence between the inevitable technological warming of the planet, carbon-based warming, and then a planet going into an ice age. Who knows? I've thought a fair amount about this kind of these fantasy scenarios about, you know, the technological civilizations in the universe. And I think the universe is quite young. I think it's really in the baby. Well, compared to how old it will last, which is basically forever. I mean, it'll disintegrate into just like elementary particles. And even those, I mean, I think they don't know whether elementary particles disintegrate or not eventually. But assuming they do, then we were just born as a universe, essentially. So this is like the baby stage, the infancy of this universe. I don't know exactly where I was going with that. Oh yeah. And so I was going to say, if there were many like technological civilizations in this universe, and let's say, I don't know, one out of a million of them are able to develop or merge with their technology or develop artificial intelligence and kind of become a spacefaring. And then eventually, you know, billions and billions of years later, these few spacefaring civilizations will encounter each other and kind of merge. And eventually the entire universe evolves into one unified kind of techno-organic consciousness. But, you know, that's a while in the future. Anyway, moving on from climate change, the next controversial topic is evolution, which is kind of strange, but I suppose that's on this list because we've got this thing in the United States, again, sort of the uniqueness, unique American weirdness. Well, that's not uniquely American. I think we also have, there are a lot of evolution denying people in like the Middle East, I'm pretty sure. I guess that's a statistic I could look up, is like, acceptance of evolution by country. And I think in Greece it's a little bit low, where it's like heavily religious. Maybe South America might be somewhat low because they're heavily Catholic. In America, I think America maybe is the lowest acceptance. I think in Saudi Arabia it's fairly low, the heavily Muslim. I don't really know about the relationship between young Earth, old Earth, creationism, and Islam is. It doesn't seem to come up as much for whatever reason as it does with fundamentalist Christianity. And let's see. Well, when did they start really thinking about, like, I wish I knew better, like the history of science, like the history of scientific belief, in the history of like public consciousness about, the age of the Earth and evolution and the history, the epoch history of the world and of the galaxy and of the universe. But I don't know when that started happening. But apparently, in the 19th century, when all the, maybe that maybe I just answered my own question. Like in the 19th century, I know about that. That I know from a little previous little research project that. That was when religious fundamentalism kind of first took hold. And I think, as far as I understand, it was basically a reaction to sort of the scientific worldview that was coming about. And people were saying, the Earth is 4.5 billion years old. We evolved from monkey-like creatures, etc. I remember I had a cousin. Well, I have a cousin who was a young Earth creationist. And so she asked me, so you believe in evolution? So you think we came from monkeys? And it's like, I didn't, what I should have said was like, I believe that we and monkeys share a common ancestor, but I didn't think well on my feet. And I still answered pretty well. I said, yeah, I think we came from something similar to a monkey. So that was still right. But I didn't fall precisely into her rhetorical trap of saying, yes, we came from monkeys. But so she went, oh, wow. Like, she was just fascinated to encounter this member of her family that had a totally different worldview than she did. And it's quite substantial, the number of people in the United States that don't, believe in a scientific, sort of the scientific consensus view of the long history of the planet, 4.5 billion, or for the universe for that matter. Like, I think the universe is whatever, 13 billion years old or something like that. And then Earth is 4.5. Oh, I mean, this is all hearsay. I'm not running these tests myself, and I happen to be part of the culture that accepts that kind of scientific worldview. And I'm sure that if I had been raised in another culture that was more hostile to that, or more into like biblical literalism, then I would have a different opinion. I don't think there's anything special about me. I'm not a particularly smart person that I just I figure everything out on my own. I think I'm just like most people. I just accept what I'm told, and then I fall into a certain culture, and I just, believe those things. Anyway, but I guess people get up in arms about it because oftentimes they say, oh, the children, what are we going to teach children in our schools? And to be honest, I don't think it matters that much. If somebody believes the world is 6,000 years old, that's pretty minor. I think they can function quite well. A person can function well in society, and really the amount of harm done by that belief, I think, is not that great. Maybe it's kind of obvious because there's a lot of people that do believe that, and like, I don't think it has, there's not a really a result. It's kind of abstract in a way, this view of history or the scientific view. I don't know. Anyway, that said, I used to be kind of annoyed and angry. I even wrote a paper called "Your Religion Is Wrong," which is kind of attacking fundamentalist, scripturalist Christianity. Back when I was in my 20s, this was all caused by this. I worked for these people, these fundies, who actually didn't like the word fundamentalist. I was asking them. They were very nice people, very open, and I was asking them questions about their religion. They said, "Oh, I don't want to say the word fundamentalist, but because that's got it's all tainted. That's people." Use that as kind of a pejorative. So they said they were scripturalists, like the what do they call it, the inerrancy of the Bible. And all there was, I don't know, I don't. This is also part of that same fundamentalism drive that happened in the 19th century as a reaction to the scientific worldview. I lost train of thought. Anyway, so yeah, I worked for these people. It was kind of similar to a Renaissance festival. They were setting it up, and for some reason they were in charge of it. It was just this gang of fundies in charge of a Renaissance festival. It was very bizarre. But and I worked for them for one summer, putting up tents and stuff. So I spent several weeks just listening to preaching, basically. They reject evolution. They reject an old earth. I guess they reject an old universe. One of the classic gotchas to that is like, well, you either reject astronomical distances or you reject the speed of light, because the way some stars are so far away, we wouldn't be able to see them unless the universe had been around for billions and billions of years. So how do you explain that? And I guess the answer is always like, well, God planted these things in a steady state 6,000 years ago. So basically God is trying to fool us into thinking that the universe is 14 billion years old, when in fact it's only 6,000 or 5,000. So it's kind of silly, but people get really up in arms about it. And I think it's because there's a real lack of spiritual ability in modern people. And I think that oftentimes Christians don't have any other recourse if they want to be spiritual, to believe in a transcendence or an eminence of God, or just a good feeling or kind of something ineffable that speaks to their union with the divine. That's kind of beyond people at this point, because they've got a very literal way of thinking, a very kind of scientific worldview that's kind of imparted on them. So their only option, if they want to be quote unquote spiritual, is to have another encyclopedia. Like a set of alternate facts, as Trump, what was her name? Kellyanne Conway, as she would say. And just, believe that the world is 6,000 years old, that people came from the Garden of Eden, et cetera, and all this is literally true. These things happened, and that's their spirituality. And that, because they're not, I think it's just people are not capable of anything else nowadays. So if you want to be a Christian, if you want to somehow set yourself apart as a Christian, you have no other alternative other than to believe a bunch of things that aren't true or that are significantly less likely to be true given evidence, and put it that way. Anywho, that was evolution. Next on the list is marijuana. Legalization. Legalize it. That's another thing that kind of ranks low in importance for me. I would almost be glad in a way if it were illegal, because I didn't start smoking it regularly until it was legalized. It's hard to get, especially for somebody with low social ability, without a lot of friends, who's not really comfortable around people. That's the thing, is you have to sort of be maneuvering around all these druggy relationships and be participating in this kind of stoner culture and have all these weird friends and stuff like that. And they keep on saying drugs are insanely easy to get, so it doesn't matter whether they're legal or illegal. But I think that's not true for many people, including myself. I almost never smoked weed, even though I was super into it. I would, every time it was offered to me, I would smoke it. But I just could never get it because it was illegal. I couldn't just go to the store and get it. Got to call somebody, and maybe they have it, maybe they don't. Maybe they know somebody, maybe they don't. It's a big pain in the ass. So I think that legalization really does increase the amount that people are smoking. I'm going to make that guess. Maybe I will be disagreed with, but that's just my personal anecdotal evidence. That said, I think probably it should be legal, especially, because you don't want people in jail. You don't want people in jail for marijuana use. I guess that's really the main reason, is that it's like a human suffering issue. But I don't think marijuana is particularly, there's some people that sort of, there's even a religion based around it, Rastafarianism. People just love it so much that the effects are great. It helps you transcend and see God and blah, blah, blah. And some people have some kind of spiritual or quasi, I used to have kind of spiritual experiences on marijuana, But then either I smoked a little bit too much of it, or I got old, or something happened, because now I have very, very unprofound experiences with marijuana. And it just like, yeah, gives me the munchies, it puts me to sleep, which is really nice. It's really nice to be able to go to fucking sleep for what I have a sleep disorder. Like last night, I went to bed around, I was around 10 or 11. I would think I'd go to bed later and then maybe I'll actually sleep. But no, I still woke up at 2:30 in the morning. So I only had like 3 or 4 hours of sleep last night. And I just been awake this whole time waiting for my showtime to start. So hopefully, I mean, I'll take a nap today, hopefully. But yeah, I'm just, I basically haven't slept 8 hours in fucking 20 years. More than that, maybe. I don't know. It's not fair. So that's one thing that I'm really looking forward to vis-a-vis death, is that I'll finally be able to sleep. I can finally like, sleep more than, you know, 2-3 hours at a time. Anyway, but marijuana actually really helps that for me, especially if, I think maybe if I kept on doing it, it wouldn't be so profound, but if I haven't done it for a while and then I do it, I will sleep. I'll take a nap and then I'll sleep the whole night and then I'll take a nap the next day. And it just seems like to be almost no limit to the amount that I can sleep. And I hear that happens to heroin users too, that it really is. Heroin use really involves a lot of sleeping. It's like a couple hours or an hour of euphoria. And then I just like you fucking sleep for days and days and days. And I don't know, that doesn't sound so bad to me, to be quite honest. So yeah, I mean, it would be nice to sleep. That is one advantage of marijuana smoking. I had this notion that I was never going to smoke marijuana again, but that kind of fell by the wayside. I decided that like life is short, you know, I enjoy it, blah, blah, blah. It's something to do. I don't have a whole lot going on. So I got the sound show and I've got my family and I've got, you know, that's about it. I don't have a career. I don't have a partner. So I don't know. I feel like I kind of am entitled a little bit to have somewhat of a marijuana habit. I don't know. Maybe that's a silly way to think, but I kind of replaced it with meditation, and that was going well for a while, but I think that was a honeymoon period I went through with meditation. And now I just kind of like, I don't know. I just haven't had the desire to meditate recently. And I don't know. I haven't been noticed that much mental health problems or anything like that, but maybe they just, I'm rationalizing it and I just don't have a good memory. So I don't know. I guess I will try meditating again sometime soon, but I really, fell off the wagon meditation wise. I don't know if I'm using that expression correctly in this case, but I stopped meditating and I haven't done it for a while. And I guess that's pretty common. It's very, very much mirrors what I do with exercise. Like I can get into a groove with exercise for a couple of days, but it just ultimately wears off. Even though I enjoy it when I'm doing it and I enjoy it afterwards, there's still some kind of resistance there. And I think it's just basically that I'm a very lazy person. I was born lazy and I will always be lazy. And that is just me. Some philosopher wrote something in praise of idleness. Maybe I need to read that. Anyway, next on the list of controversial topics, and we have 12 more minutes of show. So I did good. I did good, even though I'm coughing up a storm. I don't know. I suspect I might have lung cancer. I still have to Google this. I'm a little afraid to. But I was on this blood pressure drug called lisinopril, and it makes you cough. Nobody ever told me about these side effects. And then I stopped taking it because I don't like to take medication, and the cough persisted. And I think I remember reading that is a known phenomenon. Like if you take lisinopril, even if you stop, the cough will persist forever. But I talked to my GP who said, no, that's not the case. The cough will go away. So I don't know. I'm going to have to re-Google and, you know, do my own research, just like an anti-vaxxer, just like a flat earther, just like a young earth creationist. See, I have no illusions that I'm less of a scumbag than the average Ugmanzi. Murder. What was I doing? I think that I was between topics. Okay, next one. Capital punishment. Capital punishment is bad. But at the same time, I don't know. I talked about abortion already. It's like, yeah, I would rather be executed than spend my life in prison. I don't know. I think many people probably say that, but I think when it comes down to it, there's like the life instinct takes over, and it's like, you know, you really, people want to live. They have a will to live. I guess it was Nietzsche that wanted to take the will to live and move beyond that to the will to power. Ah! But I still think that you shouldn't be harvesting people, harvesting up criminals and executing them. Whether or not life actually is intrinsically or inherently valuable, I don't know. I guess that would be a tougher topic to address. Is life inherently valuable? I don't know. So, okay, marriage equality. I guess that means gay marriage. That's one that's cut and dry. There's no reason why gays shouldn't get married. So, and I think there's really nothing to talk about there. Although, this is a little bit interesting. It was always confused me. Like, I thought that the reason that people opposed that was religious, purely religious. But in non-religious countries, like, let's say China, there's also opposition to gay culture and gay marriage and gay this, that, to gay this, that. There's opposition to gay this, that in China. So it can't all be just like a scripturalist thing, like where it says in the Bible, thou shalt not lie with a man. So there's something else going on there. So one idea is that it's some kind of instinct. Like it dates back to when people needed to survive, the tribe needed to survive. So obviously it's kind of like an every sperm is sacred, every sperm is great kind of thing. You don't want to waste your sperm on somebody of the same sex when you could be using it on somebody to get pregnant and building up the tribe. Maybe that's just like a real fundamental kind of almost an instinctual human thing. So they think people should be getting married and reproducing. And if you love a man and have sex with a man, that's not going to happen. That's somehow wrong outside of the restrictions of religion. But I think that's actually probably the reason that those things were built into the religion to begin with. These ancient Israelites were a tribe fending for their survival, and they needed all the sperm they could get. So they wanted to not spill it erroneously on the ground like Onan. Like supposedly that was taken as a prohibition against masturbation too. Onanism. They called masturbation Onanism. But anyway, I'm for marriage equality. Gays get married. Woo! I think that's pretty cut and dry. So that's kind of a nice topic, and that it's not like gun control. Gun control I find to be a little, and even abortion I find a little bit tough. Gun control is a little bit tough, but marriage equality I don't find to be tough. That one I can just check a box and say do it. Okay, next topic is immigration reform. Open borders. I think that's, I don't think anybody, I don't think there are many people really calling for open borders. And I think, again, I'm going to criticize America again and criticize the political binary. I think there's a tendency in the United States for one side to completely caricature and strawman the other side and just like use the absolute most extreme version of their beliefs and attack that and say, oh, all the Democrats want open borders. But that's not true. You know, all the Democrats don't want open borders. Maybe there's like a small percentage of very vocal, super progressive, like urban hipster, young Zoomer types that are like in favor of this, on the internet at least, this sort of extreme versions of Marxism where you take away all these divisions, like national boundaries, and it's all just one continual social soup of people all being equal, like kind of a Pol Pot regime where you don't have names anymore and you call each other comrade. But that's not widespread, and even the people that do advocate for things like that, I can't take them seriously because they're 14-year-olds on the internet. So I don't know. I don't know enough about the immigration. I don't know, maybe the immigration policy is fine. I don't know if it's necessarily more or less restrictive in the United States than it is elsewhere. I know it's gotten more restrictive in Canada. I've got a friend who's his wife really wants to move to Canada because she just thinks the USA is falling apart, which is not an uncommon sentiment. I think the move to Canada people, I think it all started back in the year 2000 with the Bush-Gore election. People were going to move to Canada if Bush won, if the Supreme Court decided that Bush won that election. So And it's been going on ever since. And I think Canada makes, is supposedly, my friend tells me that they've made it really difficult to immigrate to Canada. Emigrate to Canada. I never know when to use the word emigrate and immigrate. Emigrate makes you sound smarter because that's like the less common word. So just always use emigrate. It's like a English Bob in The Unforgiven. There's no wonder you all emigrated to America. It's because they wouldn't have you in England. Anyway, immigration reform. I don't know if I would do anything. Again, this is like something I don't know enough about. Like, I'm going to go ahead and say the immigration policy in the United States is perfect. It's exactly where it should be. It's fine. Don't touch it. Okay, the Trump presidency is the next one. I had a funny idea. I'm not going to say it's funny. I had a fun idea for a bumper sticker. It was going to be Trump was an adequate president. And I think that would just get you killed by everyone on every side. Like all the progressives would come after you and all the conservatives would come after you. And that's just that American polarization, that American political binary, that tendency towards extremism of thought. Like Trump was either the fucking savior or he was the devil. You know, there's no in between. But, you know, Trump didn't destroy the world. He didn't destroy the economy. He did some bad stuff, but Obama did some bad stuff too. The whole kids in cages thing, Obama was doing that and Biden is doing that. It's just like, there's just this focus on it because he's the other side. He's the Republican. So he's got to be evil. So we just pick on all the things that he does. And I don't know. I don't think the Trump presidency was that momentous. I don't think that much happened. I don't know. Maybe that's a silly thing to say, but well, COVID happened. That was the big thing. And then, as I said, Biden was praising Trump for his Operation Warp Speed, getting the vaccine out extremely quickly, which is very weird when you think about it, because, you know, I went over this before, but it's like, it's the Trump vaccine. So all these Trumpists should be in a hurry to take the Trump vaccine, but they're not. I don't know. So I don't know what's going on there. But then they had that thing where Trump got booed at one of his conventions. So maybe it just doesn't have anything to do with Trump at all. Maybe it just I really am suspicious of that. I think it has more to do with sort of this perception of the authoritarian Democrats, this Jonah Goldberg-esque authoritarian liberalism, quote, not that much, authoritarian progressivism. Authoritarian liberalism is an oxymoron. So, yeah, just like, you know, as I was saying, you know, as soon as the government tells you to do something, you do the opposite. And then the government yells even harder, and then the opposition grows. So you gotta be like a reed in the wind. But I don't know, nobody will ever learn that lesson. You gotta watch your Star Wars, man. You gotta be like Yoda raising the X-Wing fighter out of the swamp. It's my lung cancer. Yeah, so I wonder, it could be lisinopril, or it could just be a consistent, persistent cough like Walter White had in Breaking Bad. I'm rewatching Breaking Bad now. I don't know. Maybe I should go to the doctor and check on my persistent cough. I suspect it's probably nothing, but you never know. Okay, next on the list, I only have 2 minutes left, is the opioid crisis. I guess the controversial thing there is, to what degree are these drug manufacturers responsible for the opioid crisis? And I would say they are somewhat, but it's not really in a capacity that they can help. I mean, they're corporations. They got to sell the product. They got to keep their shareholders happy. They got to do everything in their power. They got to advertise. So it's almost like these corporations are kind of directed to move in certain ways that are not really their fault, quote unquote. So it's like, there's got to be drug companies, and the drug companies have to promote their products. So it's not like they're making a decision to be evil. it kind of just turned out that way. I don't know. I think there's a lot of blaming of will in, I'm going to say in America again, but probably just the whole world. There's a lot of blaming of people and of wills when it's really just the way things had to be. It's just the way culture moves, and we're all kind of other directed. We're all kind of helpless in a way. But there's a lot of like targeting of people. It's this whole obsession with accountability. Like, you've got to pick a scapegoat. You've got to pick this one person or this one company and slap them around a bit. And I guess that's what people want. That's what makes them happy. But I don't think that's a really very accurate thing to do. Now, that's what I think about the opioid crisis. That said, it may very well, I don't know very much about it. That was more a general statement. I don't know enough about the opioid thing to really make, to generalize that statement to that. or to specify that statement to that, rather. So it may very well be that these companies acted unethically. And then, yeah, so people are taking drugs. But when I was discharged from the hospital with my broken leg, I was on a whole slew of opioids in the hospital. And then he discharged me with none. Oh, show's over. Bye-bye.